there might be somebody to speak in contrast to the commissioner. No. Oh, there's Senator Fischbach.
Thanks for waiting.
So, Senator Fischbach, I indicated as you came through the door that we left off where you had asked for somebody else to testify, and I'm not sure if you have somebody, a name, or are you just...
Mr. Chair, the only point that I was trying to make, and I believe there are people who do want to testify, but if we are going to move into policy in this committee and take testimony from one side, we owe it to the public to be fair.
Well, I agree. So I asked... So,
but no, I do not have someone in particular. I just wanted to...
Okay.
Make sure that you'd open it up.
Senator Tomasoni, is there...
I'm good with moving on the amendment.
Okay. What, there was a gentleman who... Did you wish... Did you have... Had you testified previously, or... If you can just identify yourself and...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Larson from Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. I'm here for the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. And... Just here to make a couple comments. I'm sorry I haven't distributed materials to you. But on the amendment, we appreciate having worked with Senator Schmidt throughout the session on these issues. I know Senator Miller listed several provisions that are moving into conference right now, and I hesitate to get up here to speak contrary to the commissioner, and I'd rather even not be here testifying in a way that would be perceived as saying that the council members don't support protecting trout streams. I want to just mention that we've actually been very supportive throughout the session on the technical support from state agencies. We've been very clear during the session that we support state agencies helping out local governments. We've helped with language that says project proposers should pay for that assistance if local governments want that to happen. We've supported Senator Scoy's amendment on the omnibus bill to reduce the size of projects that require an EAW from 40 to 20 acres. That language also requires a hydrogeo study, some air studies, a traffic study, and a study of land use. I hate to get up here and be negative because we've tried to be so positive along the way, but with the provisions that would be added, we really do wonder why they're needed given the charge that's being given to state agencies in the omnibus bill. We're very concerned, and I just want to point out that there's been a lot of discussion about trout streams, but the language that would be put into the bill if the amendment was passed also relates to springs, groundwater seepage areas, fens, and perennially flowing tributaries of designated trout streams. I've had a chance to talk with one of our consultants over the interim here, and she said it's pretty darn hard to find a place in large parts of Minnesota that aren't a mile from a spring where there might be sand. So we really consider one of these provisions to be a virtual moratorium in this part of the state on mining. And the other concern we have is just the generic nature of this. The provision that Senator Miller referenced that talked about the technical advisory team, and I don't know if you still have that language in front of you, that language is introduced in both houses, had blanks for setbacks, and it was blank feet from a trout stream, blank feet from several other protected resources. That language was changed because people thought it might be improper to have a standard based on feet, and instead it's been changed so this technical advisory team talks about standards for protection of those resources, and we just think that's a better way to do it, and that's already in the omnibus bill. So I just wanted to make that mention. We're just concerned about how this language would be implemented. We support strong standards. We support environmental review, and we're going to do everything we can to satisfy Trout Unlimited and others in our projects and the DNR and the PCA, anybody else who cares. That we'll do what we need to do to protect trout streams, fens, springs, and other things. So thank
okay.
you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Questions for Mr. Larson, and say hello to your father for us.
Thank you.
I mentioned that Mr. Larson's father was a member of the Senate for about 20 years. So, Mr. Quillis, did you?
Mr. Chairman, very brief. Tony Quillis, I'm the Director of Environmental Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and just want to echo what Mr. Larson said and have been working with Senator Schmidt on this as it's gone through the process, and he has been very good to work with it and has had an open-door policy. But I just wanted to point out a couple areas of concern to the chamber and the industry. It appears that we have kind of singled out one industry here that has been around for over 100 years in this state. Some of the owners are on their third generation. And as Mr. Senator Miller pointed out, that it's not its perspective that we're going forward on, but some of the expansions that possibly could happen on some of these existing facilities are a concern to us. Because if you look at the map, I know that you have had some maps handed out to you, but and you probably won't be able to see this, but if we're talking about a one-mile buffer around any springs, fens, designated trout streams, it's basically anything in the dark green on this map. So it would be anything down on that whole southeastern part of the state. So that is the concern for us, that anything in the industrial sand area would not be allowed anywhere in. That's just on the 1 mile within the trout stream map. Mr. Chairman, you'll also, if you'll look on Section 50, that's Section 50. Section 51 also talks about the DNR not issuing at all any appropriation groundwater permits in any for the mining industry in the Paleozoic Plateau, which is also that's just that comes up into the yellow sections of that map that I'm holding up. So that is concerned with us. And then there's a third part that says if you're not in any of those two, that you also are prohibited from mining within 25 feet of a water level. So we just, you know, we have gotten some concerns there. It seems we've singled out an individual industry. And I wanted to point out earlier we talked about there were six counties that we were dealing with, and now we've dropped it down to the Paleozoic Plateau, which is basically those same six counties. But I wanted to point out that there are 19 industrial sand permits down in there, 12 of which are for sand and gravel washing, 7 for pit dewatering. But there are 230 total permits in those six counties. And so besides those 19, there's 211 other industries down in those counties. Those industries involve golf courses, landscaping, nurseries, crop irrigation, snowmaking, aquaculture, power generation, ag processing, metal processing, and wastewater treatment plants. So I just wanted to point that out to the committees that there are some concerns there among the business community that we've kind of singled out one industry, and there are other industries there. And Mr. Chairman, thank you for pointing out those concerns, allowing me to point those out.
Questions for Mr. Quillis? Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, since we are getting into some testimony here today, we had an opportunity to hear from DNR Commissioner Tom Landwehr earlier today. There are a couple of individuals who would like to speak, if we could. John Lucheski from Trout Unlimited and also Steve Hirsch from DNR could clarify some of the comments that were recently made.
Well, I don't want to get into a lot of back and forth, but if it's just for a couple minutes,
sure. Just for a couple minutes.
Identify yourselves and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Lucheski. I'm a member of Minnesota Trout Unlimited. Here to just speak very briefly, you heard the commissioner of the DNR. The DNR supports these setbacks and buffers. Just want to clarify that these are pro-fisheries provisions. Never intended to be anything more than an effort to protect the cold water fisheries in southeastern Minnesota. For those of you who have not strayed east of Highway 52, if you've only gone to Rochester and back, you haven't really seen the driftless area. You need to drop into these valleys, and it's an incredible world-class trout fishery. It's drawing people from around the state, the region, and nationally now, and very important economic driver in the area. The data's a little old, but in that driftless area, the annual economic impact of trout angling was over $1 billion. The state has made a huge investment in this area, buying trout angling easements along these streams, huge investment in habitat work. All of this is completely dependent upon cold groundwater. These are cold water fisheries because they need cold water. Without the cold water from the springs, the trout fisheries disappear. And the investment is wasted. And thousands of jobs that are dependent upon this industry are lost. So just quickly want to point out a few things about this in response to some of the other testimony. These provisions apply only to extreme southeastern Minnesota, what we call the Driftless Area or the Paleozoic Plateau. They do not apply to the Minnesota River Valley. All the testifiers that I've seen in the other steps along the way, these are all people in the industry in the Minnesota River Valley, not in southeastern Minnesota, and definitely does not apply to northern Minnesota. Again, this there was a gentleman here this morning, an industry geologist, Mr. Jeff Broberg. He could not come back this afternoon. He was going to testify about the wisdom of the 25-foot buffer to the water table. Just point out, the DNR supports that. He's an industry geologist. He strongly supports that. Says that that is appropriate for protecting the aquifers, important to the trout streams, and would not impede the industry. So these are, I view these as very pro-business. I mean, it's a fisheries bill, but they're, if anything, these are very pro-business provisions, providing a roadmap to the industry about sensitive areas to stay away from. So, also want to point out, there's been some discussion about the provisions in other legislation this session, specifically environmental review or development of standards. Those environmental review provisions, while good, environmental review is only a procedural matter. Ultimately, those findings can be either accepted or rejected by the local government unit. So there's really no substance in that environmental review process. In Senate File 1607, again, it has calls for some study and development of rules and standards, but gives the DNR and PCA no authority to actually adopt those. Again, they're advisory to local units of government, which may or may not adopt them. And we're talking about state-level resources, public waters, public fisheries. It's appropriate that we have some state minimum standards, which the local government unit can go beyond, but we should have some minimum statewide standards, and we applaud Senator Schmidt for attempting to get those enacted this session. Without delay, give some certainty to business and get ahead of the industry before it actually begins in this area. So I think I'll just end there. I'm just encourage the committee to protect these trout fisheries and these thousands of jobs dependent upon them. And thank you.
Okay, thanks. You've got to identify yourself. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological and Water Resources Director. And I'll just provide very briefly some clarification about the regulatory framework and how the buffering provisions, I believe, would provide some additional protection that's not necessarily there right now with the existing regulatory framework. And that has to do with as they start digging for a mine in this karst topography, which has a lot of different conduits that deliver water to the surface, got a lot of fissures and cracks. It's very complex hydrology. Once they start digging, one of these conduits could be interrupted, and we don't know where all these conduits are. So in order to protect trout streams and springs that are delivering cold water to these trout streams, it's very important that these conduits are not severed. And we can, if we've got the groundwater information, and as Mr. Lencheski described towards the end of his comments, we can provide recommendations in an EAW or an EIS as the state, saying that you need to avoid this particular area to protect this trout stream. But those recommendations don't necessarily have to be followed when the local unit of government issues its conditional use permit. And in addition to that, there's often situations where we don't have the spring shed map, so we don't know how the groundwater flows, and we would need to get additional information before we could even make a recommendation like that. So the buffering provisions around springs and trout streams would add a level of regulatory protection for these resources that doesn't exist right now under the current framework, and that was the only clarification I was going to offer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. So thanks for your testimony. Further discussion on the amendment? If not, Senator Sieben moves that the A-17 amendment pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
I think the motion fails.
Division.
I think. Division. Jen. All right. All those in favor, if you could signify by raising your hand. And those opposed? Okay, on a vote of 10 to 11, the amendment fails. Is there further discussion on Senate File 796? Does anybody wish to take any action? Senator Schmidt, is there anything else you wish to add on the bill?
I have a motion.
Pardon? I'm sorry. Senator Sachsauger has moved that Senate File 796 be recommended to pass. I'm sorry. Nicole's reminded me that we have the division report. So as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks for all your time. Okay, then we've got two other bills. Senator Sieben has both bills. Senator Sieben, which bill would you like to try? Okay, Senate File 677. Senator Sachsaug moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I do have an amendment, which is the A18 amendment. So if that could be distributed, I can explain. And Beth Fraser, who is here, I believe, or was here, from the Secretary of State's office, can answer questions about this amendment. But essentially what it does is, I guess it just came forward recently, it adds consistency to the way that ballot questions are proposed when there's a school district consolidation. And so, as members can see, it doesn't change anything substantially. I don't believe it just clarifies the way the question is answered.
Senator Sieben, I'm sorry. We're in the process of distributing the amendment.
Okay.
So.
This isn't the one I had.
I don't have the one. So. Okay. So, is this the correct one? Okay. Senator Sieben, apparently we had two A18 amendments, so.
One I got.
Do we have it? Let's wait for a second for it to be distributed.
That's not it.
Okay. What was being distributed was an A18 to a different bill. So if members have it, Senator Sieben?
Looks like this.
Looks like this?
Mr. Chair and members, it should say the SCS 0677 A18. That's the one I'm hoping it is.
This is the one that references school board elections, or school referendum elections. Is that
right? And so Beth Fraser from the Secretary of State's office can speak to it if members have questions. Essentially, I guess they found that the there's some inconsistency in the way this question is asked in elections compared to other elections that come forward where there's similar language. And so they asked me if I'd be willing to consider moving this amendment, which I don't think is controversial.
Okay, so Senator Sieben moves the A18 amendment. We have it presented to us. Is there further discussion on Senator Sieben's motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll just run through what each article of the bill is at this point, and I'm happy to answer questions as they arise. So Article 1, I'll run through the articles I meant. Article 1 of the bill deals with some redistricting changes that have been, I feel like I've presented this bill, so I apologize if it's not enough detail, let me know. But I feel like a lot of you have already heard this bill in some other committee. So Article 1 deals with some redistricting changes that are located within the city of Edina and in Stillwater Township, Senator Franzen and Senator Housley's districts. And then there's also some obsolete language that is taken out in that article. Yeah. Article 2 in general is early voting provision. Early voting members, for those of you who aren't aware, allows for voters to vote, and in this bill it's specified as 15 days before the state general election at voting places where people can currently vote. I say that way because it doesn't allow, as previous bills had, it doesn't allow for vote centers to be established by cities or counties. So there won't be early voting at a shopping mall or places like that. And then the rest of Article 2 has conforming language or language to allow for early voting. Article 3 amends the absentee voting law, allowing voters, so it allow voters to cast a ballot without excuse. 27 states and D.C. currently allow no excuse absentee voting. Members, I'm sure you're aware that many Minnesotans, many hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans actually are now voting by absentee ballot. And coming up with one of the specified reasons that under Minnesota law you need to provide to cast an absentee ballot. This provision would say that you don't need an excuse. You don't anticipate, you don't need to say, for instance, that you anticipate you'll be out of the precinct on election day. Article 4 contains provisions in a Senator Senjum and Senator Rest bill that deal with vacancies and nomination for both partisan and nonpartisan candidates. Article 5 includes quite a few election administration changes that were brought forward by county election officials. Most of these are non-controversial. It takes language out that makes reference to colored ballots, for instance. The article also contains a provision to lower the threshold that triggers an automatic recount, and a proposal by Senator Eakin to expand mail balloting. So mail balloting under the bill that's before you would allow cities and towns with fewer than 1,000 registered voters to conduct a mail balloting election. The current threshold is 400. Article 6 was authored by our Vice Chair, Senator Champion, and is very similar to language that was carried last year by Senator Champion. By Senator Chamberlain. It's the result of the Election Integrity Task Force that the governor established, and Secretary Ritchie was a co-chair of. It provides for additional notifications for felons regarding the loss and restoration of their voting rights. Article 7 moves the state primary to the first Tuesday after the third Monday in June. Jeez. Article 8 is a provision that Senator Bonhoff and Senator Kiffmeyer worked on to institute a small pilot project for electronic poll books to be used across the state of Minnesota. It would include one or more precincts in the cities of Dilworth, Minnetonka, Moorhead, St. Anthony, and St. Paul. And then Article 9 is the appropriations to the LCC and the Secretary of State. hopefully you have mostly your questions, members, will be focused on Article 9, since this is the finance division. But, of course, I'm happy to answer any questions about the bill.
Okay. And, Senator Steven, we've got the fiscal note. Mr. Nauman, is that a correct amount that we have in front of us of
Mr. Chair and Senator Steven, in fact, I was just looking through that. The fiscal note showing a 14 effect of $366,135. I see the 135, but it looks to me like the Secretary of State appropriation and the LCC appropriation are higher than the $366,000, so I'm just trying to reconcile that. But
well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, I just realized that the fiscal note was dated March 14th, which I believe was before the time when Senator Bonoff's electronic poll book provision was included. So that could be one reason. It's different.
All right. Okay. Mr. Nauman is checking on that. Further questions? Senator Latz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sieben, the provision relating to felons voting, does the provision give discretion to the county attorneys in deciding whether or not to prosecute under those circumstances?
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, yes, it does. Right now, as the county attorneys testified in my subcommittee and I think some other committees, this provision where they're required to investigate cases of voter fraud is the only instance in which they're so specified in Minnesota statute. And so this, at the suggestion of the county attorneys, is changed.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Latz.
I don't have any problem with them being required to investigate, but I do have a problem with them being required to prosecute under the circumstances. And so I'm glad to hear that the law change has been made in here to give them discretion whether or not to bring charges.
That's correct.
Further discussion on the bill or questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, so on the change of the primary, are you allowing sitting legislators to fundraise during the legislative session in case they have a challenge so that when they run into the primary, they actually have some
Senator
money to...
Senator Tomasoni, you're allowed to fundraise during the legislative session right now. This would not change that, even though the primary changes. Of course, you're prohibited from raising funds from lobbyists and PACs during the legislative session, and this is silent on that issue. So, obviously,
can the opponents raise money from PACs? And
no, they can't.
Oh yeah, they can.
No, they can't. And Mr. Chair, I can clarify how I know that because when I ran for the House the very first time, I didn't realize that provision, and I accidentally accepted a check from someone who forgot he was a lobbyist. Thanks a lot. And had to pay like a $100 fine because I accepted a check during the legislative session, even though I wasn't a current legislator.
And return the money.
And I had to return the money. So I'm fairly clear that's the case.
Okay, Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, Senator Sieben's recollection was correct. There's the $21,000 and in the rider, the electronic roster pilot project carries an additional $67,000. But that constitutes the difference. So the appropriation would be, as displayed in the bill, the cost $433,000 and $135,000 in 15 is in fact correct.
Okay, thank you. Further discussions on the bill. Any motions on the bill? Senator Sieben, would you like to do anything?
Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate File 677, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the floor.
On Senator Sieben's
roll
motion.
Call, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Limmer has asked for a roll call. Clerk will take the roll. The chairman votes yes.
Anderson.
No.
Bonoff.
Yes.
Champion.
Yes.
Dibble.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen.
No.
Latz.
Yes.
Limmer.
No.
Lori.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Newman. Nino.
No.
Pappas.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Saxon.
Yes.
Steven.
Yes.
Stump.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Pass.
Westrum.
Pass.
Uyghur.
Yes.
Newman. Tomasoni. Westrum.
All right, on a vote of 12 to 7, the bill passes.
Thank you, Mr.
And Senator Sieben, you have the last bill for the afternoon, which is, if I can find it, Senate File 382. Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill that's before you, Senate File 382, seeks, it's a consumer protection bill that seeks to protect consumers, especially senior citizens, I should say, that are being targeted by fraudulent coin dealers. There have been a series of articles in the Star Tribune over the past couple of years about how seniors, citizens generally, but Minnesotans have been ripped off by coin dealers who have set up shop in some cases in Minnesota or make calls into Minnesota and essentially defraud people of their money by either not delivering on coins that they promise to people over the phone or in person, or by selling coins at such a substantially inflated value that it's really a ripoff to those people that they sell them to. And so this bill has been through a number of committees, and we've been working with the many good actors, I should say, or the legitimate businesses in Minnesota that are in this business. It's been a work in progress between the Attorney General's office, who brought forth this legislation or the need for this legislation, and recognized that Minnesotans were being taken advantage of in some cases by these unscrupulous coin dealers, and between the advocates for the reputable coin dealers in that currently that are doing business here in the state. So as a result of these discussions that have been ongoing as the bill has moved through committee, we do have another amendment, or I'm sorry, I should say an amendment, the A14 amendment. It makes changes to address some of the industry concerns. Is it in members' packets? In luck. Or does it need to be distributed?
Okay, it's being distributed.
Would you like me to explain it or wait?
No, let's wait till it's distributed to members. Okay, go ahead, Senator Sieben.
So, Mr. Chair, the A14 amendment, as I said, makes changes to address some industry concerns. It tightens the definition of what a coin dealer representative is, and it clarifies the coin dealer's oversight and responsibilities regarding the representative's acting on their behalf. Again, I just want to be clear that this was brought forward by the industry to address some concerns that they had. And then the second part of the amendment, which starts on or I'm thinking of it in my mind as the second part. It's on line 112 to 114. Expresses a concern that the bill was too prescriptive in naming a specific screening association to do some of the background checks. And so it changes the language to make that more broad, again, to address some concerns that were brought to us.
Okay, we have Senator Siebens' motion on the A14 amendment.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, looking at the amendment on line 7, there's words that say provided that such reliance is reasonable. How would you define what reasonable means in the context of this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Benjamin Velzin. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. And, Mr. Chair, Senator, in response to your question, generally under Minnesota law, reasonable is, in this context, knew or should have known. So, for example, if a coin dealer knew that a representation made to it by its coin dealer representative was false or should have known because, for example, that coin dealer representative has been in the news lately because of conviction for fraud or something like that, the reliance on that coin dealer representative's statement that, yes, I'm a good, upstanding citizen, and I fall within the provisions of the bill would not be reasonable. So,
Senator Anderson has a question.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, the amendment, I'm looking on the amendment of 1.12, says page 6, line 6, and I'm trying to look in the second engrossment. I'm hoping I've got the right bill. It doesn't seem to match up.
Maybe I'm... Sir, are you looking at the division report or at the bill?
I'm looking at the bill.
If you want to look at the division report, that's...
Division report instead?
The amendment was drafted to the division report. Is that... Well, let's... Senator Anderson, if it's okay, let's continue with the discussion of the amendment.
Okay.
Senator Anderson, excuse me. Did you find which?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Senator Sieben, was there anything else in the amendment? Okay. Senator Sieben moves adoption of the A14 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Sieben, let me ask in terms of the financing. You set this up in the division report. You set this up as a fee charged to the various dealers. Is that correct?
That's correct. And, Mr. Chair, sorry.
And so that sets up what a special revenue fund. Is that how you're doing it?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And you'll see on page. Does it specify? So the revenue fund is on lines 410 to 413 of the bill. And I was going to point out in the fiscal note. Oh, thank you. Page 5. There it is. Page 5 of the fiscal note shows that the initial license fee for the bullion dealers would be $25. Each representative would be $10. This is on an annual basis. There's an OET surcharge in there. So essentially, we heard this in previous committees, the license fees were established to try to make the bill be revenue neutral, to cover the costs that would be incurred from additional staff at the Department of Commerce.
Now, the fiscal note shows that there's a small savings.
Small.
Is that still the case with the special revenue fund?
Mr. Chair, that's what I thought. I thought, but
Mr.
I
Nauman,
see Mr. Nauman shaking his head.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 4.12, the amount collected under this subdivision is annually appropriated to the agency to implement and enforce the chapter. think that means that it nets out to zero. So the fiscal note was originally showing the bill prior to the division report, which netted the expenditures from the revenues and arrived at a small savings. I think the way that we're thinking about it now, it nets out to zero because you're appropriating any money that you receive.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Brickwetty is here from the Department of Commerce. If I'm not mistaken, it's just really a rounding thing where this is the approximate fee they thought would, you know, it's based on the firmest assumptions they could make. But Mr. Brickwetty can.
Mr. Brickwetty?
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwetty, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce. Senator Seaman is correct. Our fiscal note was prepared and the savings that are reflected on the note reflect our attempt to have a round dollar number fee assessed as opposed to $24 and some odd cents. But I believe Mr. Nauman's correct in the way that the language would work. The intention here was for the fee to cover the costs incurred at the department.
So Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair, members, the only point that I was making is, and it may be a minor point, but I'll highlight for members that on 4.12 and 4.13, that in the division report, the language is very clear in saying that we are annually appropriating any money that's received from the other parts of the bill. So I think that it spends what it collects. So we would net off to zero. And it's no longer a general fund expenditure. This is a special revenue fund now.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the testimony. Are there other questions on Senate File 382?
Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the language on the amendment that we had passed, on line 12, it makes reference to some descriptive words called reputable, reliable, and accurate. And we're taking out and then coupled with a vendor that's authorized to do business in Minnesota rather than the original language that required membership of the National Association of Professional Background Screeners. I'm not familiar with that organization. I'm sure it's some type of trade organization. But if you're not a member or if you are a member, does that make anyone any more professional or anyone more virtuous if you're a member of it or not? And what was the reason for just not recognizing a membership in that organization?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, the language that was in the division report that we now deleted that references the National Association of Professional Background Screeners, that was language that was suggested originally by the Attorney General's office because it's a industry standard organization and of which a large number of background screeners are a part of. The language also said, or an equivalent vendor, which we thought got at other concerns. But then Mr. Apitz is here, who expressed some concern from organization that he represents that by specifically naming this National Association of Professional Background Screeners, you could be implying a preference that those groups have to come from that. And so the language that is in the A14 amendment broadens that language. Mr. Apitz agreed to this, and the AG's office agreed to it, to not specify that particular organization. But it still gets at the intent, which is it needs to be a reputable background screener, essentially, to conduct these screenings.
Mr. Chair, how would one determine if a vendor is reputable or reliable or, for that matter, accurate? Is it simply they don't have a public criminal record or a complaint?
I would assume that that's the case, but if the AG's office wants to clarify, add to that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the intent with this change in the A14 amendment was, as Senator Seaman indicated, to not reference a particular association in even though that language regarding the National Association of Background Screeners was already in Minnesota law. I believe it's in either the debt collection or the debt settlement statutes. But to still impose standards that, for example, a gold coin dealer couldn't hire his brother who worked out of his basement to do some sort of search on the internet or something along those lines and call it a background search under the bill. So the reputable, reliable, and accurate language was the intent of that was to impose some sort of minimum reliability standards on whatever background screener was chosen by the bullion coin dealer.
Well, Mr. Chair, the reason I'm asking is I'm just trying to find out what that standard might be. Is there a standard in existence that you would rely on to classify a person as reputable or accurate or reliable?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, that I think would ultimately be a determination made by the Department of Commerce as administering this proposed regulation of bullion coin dealers, and it would be a Department of Commerce decision whether those standards in the amendment are met in their administration of the bill. So.
Okay. Further questions on Senate File 382. Senator Engelbert.
We're still on the amendments? Or? No, I'm sorry,
no.
You're not.
No.
Mr. Chair, I'm really confused, but this time I am. I'm sorry.
Apology accepted.
I do have a question, though, on Section 4. Section 4, I keep moving this thing out of the way. Section 4, and maybe the gentleman from the Attorney General's office could answer this. It's kind of going to the same direction that Senator Limmer was. Section 4, 5.21, when you talk about other crimes involving fraud, theft, or dishonesty. Dishonesty according to who? What's the standard? Is that in statute? Am I missing something there? Is there a dishonesty statute? Would the rules of the commissioner be able to do that? I guess I'm just asking that question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, originally the Section 4 of the bill included a broader prohibition on the types of crimes that would disqualify one from being a bullion coin dealer or a coin dealer representative. In discussions with members of the industry, there were some concerns about having that broader standard might have a potential for conflict with federal law relating to Title VII. In order to address those concerns, the standard that was arrived at in consultation with the industry was the standard you see now in Section 4 and relating to financial crimes or crimes involving fraud, theft, or other types of dishonesty. And again, I think that I know that there is descriptions of these type of crimes because they're of what falls within these categories of crimes in various case law and whatnot and what forth. So I do believe there would be guidance out there which the Department of Commerce could look to in administering the statute or if it comes to it some sort of.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up in line 5.26, it's referred to dishonesty as well. I just think it's kind of a broad statement. I don't disagree with the concept. I just, when you see that there, it's in the eyes of who is dishonest, and if the if the folks you're dealing with here, the folks that think this is the right way to go, I just think it's kind of broad, and maybe I should throw that out just for discussion here. But dishonesty through my eyes might be different than yours. I mean, so that kind of discretion cannot be used then? This is really clear?
Mr. Chair, Senator, what I will say is that in discussions with the industry, they were okay with these standards being in here as opposed to the standards that were previously in the bill. So they felt they had apparently a comfort level with this language in here. So.
Senator Britson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe somebody from the Department of Commerce could comment one way or the other. How would you enforce the word dishonesty when it comes to your actions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebretson, I think that we would look to the ruling of the court to inform that decision. The language requires that it would be a prohibition for any bullion coin dealer or coin dealer representative if they've been convicted of a financial or crime in this area in the last 10 years. And so I think we would look to the ruling of the court to inform our decision whether or not they would be eligible for registration as either a bullion coin dealer or a coin dealer representative.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't want to belabor this, but if the ruling of the court was that they were convicted of theft or fraud but not dishonesty, so that would eliminate them then? I guess I'm missing something here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think that if they were convicted of a financial crime or another crime involving
certainly
fraud
be dishonest.
Or theft, they would be precluded from registering as a bullion coin dealer or a coin dealer representative. I would defer to an individual, perhaps one of the committee members with a law degree, that on the dishonesty class. But I think, generally speaking, we would look to the ruling of the court to inform our decision on whether or not that individual was eligible for registering in this manner.
Mr. Chair.
I am belaboring this, aren't I, Mr. Chair? I apologize. Maybe the legal folks here could tell us, is there any court rulings with regards to the general term of dishonesty? I certainly understand theft and fraud, and I understand that they would be dishonest, but the term dishonesty, I'm not going to belabor this. I'm just wondering if it needs to be there and if it's just too broad, too, what's the word I'm looking for?
Mr. Bowder and Senator Ingebrigtsen is looking at you, not me.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm sorry, I had to step out of the room for a moment, and I'm not sure exactly which reference in the bill you're referring to.
Page 5, the word dishonesty in two different places there, 5.21 as well as 5.6.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I guess what I would say there is I think this becomes a matter of discretion for the commissioner in deciding whether a crime involves dishonesty. If there's misrepresentation of some kind, for example, the commissioner can make that determination. But it'd be clear enough that there are convictions that do not necessarily reference the fact of dishonesty, if that helps you.
So what I would say is the commissioner would then have the ability to go ahead and if there was not a conviction of a obvious, well, I guess it wouldn't be obvious, but of an alleged person that was committing fraud or theft and got off by a technicality, would the commissioner then, with his discretion, think that he might still be considered dishonest and be able to enforce this law?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I do think it says convicted. So if there were an inability to obtain a conviction, I don't think the commissioner would be permitted to examine the circumstances surrounding the charges.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, did you intend to just keep this section of law that Senator Ingebrigtsen has brought up to rely on a conviction of a financial crime? Was there any discussion about a personal crime, that someone assaulted someone? Should that be included in this reference or not?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, the language was crafted with the industry to try to address issues of financial crime, certainly. Just thinking off the top of my head, for other crimes involving dishonesty, I don't know if deceptive trade practices or other, there are other things that we're not thinking about that could potentially be an issue that is why we'd perhaps want to keep dishonesty in there. I don't feel real strongly about it. If members have a lot of angst over it, but I'm not an attorney either and don't have a lot of I'm not real clear on exactly why it says I can't point to it something clearly that is what would be captured under dishonesty. But obviously, like Mr. Bodern clarified, there needs to have been a conviction within the previous 10 years. It can't just be anything else, just charges.
It's already a high threshold.
Just one last question. I know that the Attorney General's office made mention of federal crime, but it's not mentioned here in the proposal before us. Did you include both state and federal financial crimes in this reference? Okay.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, some examples of other crimes of dishonesty might include providing false information to a police officer, providing a false, submitting a false police report. There are a whole variety of crimes that are not specifically defined as fraud or theft, but would be crimes of dishonesty that might be appropriate to be banned from having these kinds of registration that would suggest the person is not of sufficient moral character to qualify for the kind of responsibility that is involved here, is more likely to perpetrate a fraud against the targeted individuals here. Other things like assault and so on, it's a different kind of conduct. If it were a person providing, if it were a personal care attendant that were providing care for a vulnerable adult, then assault would be a more relevant crime to consider in a prohibition, but not in this kind of circumstances, I would submit.
Okay, thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, I understand exactly what Senator Letts is talking about. There's something called a conviction of dishonesty in the statutes. I guess that would answer the question. It's just really broad. It just under whose eyes are and what people are dishonest, I guess. I just happened to catch this, and I'm not trying to throw a monkey wrench into the bill. I think it's a good idea, but I just think the word dishonesty is very broad, and again, through my eyes, might be different than the eyes of somebody else.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, to this, I know I don't have any specific example right in front of me, but I do know that there are several instances where we talk about a fiduciary responsibility and defining that relationship and what it takes to be able to meet that. And it often refers to crimes involving fraud, theft, and, you know, and there is a third one. I think it is dishonesty, as I recall. So, I mean, but to your point, I think we should make sure that there is some pretty sound background on fraud, theft, or dishonesty, because this isn't actually discretion on the part of the commissioner. This is mandatory, so they must deny for a crime that has fraud, theft, or dishonesty. So, I mean, I think that there is some certainty and some court background around this term of art if it's been pulled properly from elsewhere. But if it hasn't, then I think your concerns are probably well-founded, because it's not discretion. It's mandatory that this set of crimes be disqualifying. And if there's questions and we're making it mandatory, it can lead to difficulties in the administration of it. From the commissioner's point of view, somebody would have basis to challenge that you didn't disqualify when you needed to if it's not discretionary. So I think we should probably find some clarity behind whether this is a term of art or not, and if it is, then I'm comfortable. If it's been well, you know, trot out, but if it's not, we should work on it.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that it's enforceable, and that's exactly what Senator Loy is talking about. You can tell he's just got his new law degree, so he's up on this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was a bar exam question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
I said it was a bar exam question. Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, in light of this language, making a choice of whether or not someone has a license to do business or not, I guess the question would be for the committee, do you want a bright line that says if you're going to deny someone their license to do business, does it require a conviction or does it require something less of a standard?
Mr.
And perhaps the word dishonesty may reflect more of a gray area, and I think that's what Senator Ingebrigtsen's getting at. And we can go either way, but we're just talking about the artful writing of this particular clause in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move that on lines 5.21 and 5.26, if council could... Essentially, what I wanted to say is or other crime involving fraud or theft. So delete the or, put the or in the other place and delete the appropriate commas in both cases. Because I think that the intent when we crafted this with the industry was to prevent those individuals who had been involved in financial crimes primarily to not be able to register as dealers or their representatives. And so I would make that motion at this time.
So Senator Sieben moves on line 521 to delete the comma, add the word or, and then delete everything after the comma or dishonesty and insert the period, and make the same amendment on lines 525 and 526. Is that correct?
Yes.
Chairman?
Senator Latz.
I mean, I understand what Senator Sieben's trying to do, and I certainly would like to respect the desire of the author. But there are a lot of crimes that would then be precluded that would make me nervous if someone had a history of that, getting this kind of a license. For example, forgery. Would that's a crime of dishonesty, but not necessarily of fraud or theft.
Would that
qualify? Making fraudulent statements, that might qualify under a crime against fraud. I'm not quite sure how we...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
And Senator Latz, I appreciate that. I think that just because at this point the language is still a little bit unclear, the bill still has to go to the floor, given that this is not the Judiciary Committee and that we're trying to, you know, because I can't seek clarity on what that reference is. And I, as I said, the intention was to prevent crimes of theft or fraud or to prohibit registration. At this point, I'd be more comfortable taking that out, looking into it, trying to get more resolution from the AG's office and the industry as to where that dishonesty phrase came in. And then if need be, we can reinsert it on the floor if the full body desires that. But in the interest of time and hopefully keeping this bill, we're trying, if you can't tell, we're trying to keep this not controversial. I would appreciate that.
All right, we have Senator Sieben's amendment in front of us. Senator Wieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, you know, I'll support that, but I just want to make sure I understand. The industry has already agreed to this language, correct?
Yes. Okay. All right, we have Senator Sieben's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries. We have Senate File 382. Is there further discussion on Senate File 382?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Limmer.
On line 8.19 of the bill, there's a reference to a violation of any federal, state, or local law. And this is regarding prohibited conduct. On line 8.19, it also refers to a labor standard. Could you tell me what a violation of a labor standard would be?
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd wonder if the Attorney General's office could help with that.
Mr. Belson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's my understanding that this prohibited conduct section and some of in the specific parts you referenced were inserted again into the bill after discussion with the industry and were not controversial by them. And I think they're similar to other aspects of laws the Department of Commerce administers. And that's my understanding of how that particular language in subpart 15 there.
So, Mr. Chair, just so I can repeat the question, what does a violation of standard, a labor standard, potentially be?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I would believe those would be labor standards you would probably find in Minnesota law. I'm not sure if the Department of Commerce has additional insight on that, and I would defer to them if
Mr. Chairman, again, I would defer to perhaps counsel for the definitive word, as I am not an attorney, as I. My understanding would be that this would be related to contracts between companies and their employees. Also, could be interpreted to include, you know, prohibited conduct related to child labor or something like that. I think this. I believe this language, and I don't have it memorized. Senator, forgive me. Is very similar to the prohibited conduct in the debt collector statute.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to get a little bit of a reference. There's labor standards that might be considered labor law, things that we've put into statute governing the relationship between the management of a business and the labor force. Would it also include a violation of a collective bargaining agreement? Is that a labor standard, or is that a collective bargaining agreement separate from labor standard? And I'd like to know that before we a little clarity on this.
Mr. Chairman, again, I Senator Limmer, I think I would defer to counsel for the definitive word on that.
Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to be the person to remind us in the spirit of my neighbor that we are now talking a whole lot of policy and not necessarily about the finances of the bill. And so I wanted to remind us of that, because earlier when we went through this recitation around dishonesty and whether it should be in the bill or not, I think we are encroaching upon another committee's jurisdiction. So I know we want to understand, but I just want to make sure that I remind us in the spirit, I'll say in the spirit of Fishbach.
Mr. Chair, I was going to say it's kind of purple over here.
That's
you
right.
know, we're kind of purple.
I don't believe that for a second, Senator Fishbach. But I tell you, when you have the combination of Senator Champion and Senator Fishbach, we, as they say, shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth. Further discussion on the bill, Senator Nino? I'm sorry. Further discussion on Senate File 382. Senator Sieben? If not, Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 382 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you. And before we adjourn, members,